18.7. The London Underground. Practice the pronunciation of the names of the lines.
Bakerloo.
Jubilee.
Central.
Metropolitan.
Circle.
Northern.
District.
Piccadilly.
East London.
Victoria.
Hammersmith and City.
Waterloo and City. 18.9. In the City.
Excuse me, can you help me?
Yes, certainly.
Can you tell me the way to the National Theatre?
To the National Theatre? Let me think. Well, first go down the street till you get to the bridge. Go over the bridge and there is a tram stop.
So I need the tram stop at the other end of the bridge?
Yes, that's right. Take the tram to Baker Street and change to the Underground. Get off at Hill Street and you will find the National Theatre on the right.
Great. Is it far from here?
No, it isn't far. You can get there in about 20 or 25 minutes.
That's great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. 18.10. The Oyster Card.
Is it worth getting an Oyster Card? I'm going to be making trips every so often down to London in the next few months, and I was wondering whether it is worth getting an Oyster Card for these small trips. When I'm in London, I like hopping on and off the tube, so I usually get a travel card for zones 1 to 2 mainly. Would it be worth getting an Oyster card? How do they work?
B. If you come to London from time to time, then yes, it's worth it. You have to pay a £5 deposit. This is to encourage people not to lose it, as it's a smart card with a chip in it and not cheap to replace. But you can always hand the card in and get that back if you don't need it anymore. It works like a pay-as-you-talk mobile phone. You load credit onto it, and when you use it, the right fare is automatically deducted. On the tube, it is vitally important to touch it to the yellow reader on the ticket barrier, both on the way in and the way out, or you get charged the maximum fare for the day, because the system doesn't know where you've been. This isn't a problem on buses, as they're all one fare, so you just touch in when you get on. It works by weak radio signals from the yellow readers that communicate with the chip in the card to make it all work. So you just have to touch it flat on the reader and you don't have to put anything in a slot. That speeds up getting through the barriers a bit, and believe me, that matters at busy stations in the London rush hour. When the credit runs out, you can load more onto it at a tube station or at one of the large tube ticket machines that has a yellow reader. The fare deducted and the remaining balance are shown on the ticket barrier screen when you touch out, so you can see when it's getting low. The fare on Oyster is less than half of a normal single ticket, as you can see from the website. This is done to encourage people to use Oyster. Capping is about the maximum you will pay in a day. If you make a lot of trips in a day and reach the price cap, you don't pay any more than you would have done with a travel card. You'll notice on that page that the price cap is always the same as a travel card price, and any other trip that day is free, so you don't lose out. If you don't reach the price cap, you've saved compared with buying a travel card, so you win either way. Another convenience is that you don't have to worry about occasionally going outside the zone, as you do with a travel card. Just to complete this picture, this isn't relevant to you, but it shows how clever it all is. All-day travel cards, except one-day ones, are always sold on Oyster. It's possible to have a long-term travel card and credit on your Oyster card at the same time. so you can go outside the travel card zones you paid for, and the extra comes off the credit balance. As a London commuter, I have an annual travel card on my Oyster card. I renew it online every year, and then next time I go through the ticket barrier at my home station, it automatically gets loaded on. So I haven't actually used a tube ticket office or ticket machine for years. The downside of this for tube staff is that fewer of them are needed, and that's the reason for most of the recent tube strikes, job losses in ticket offices. 18.11. Have you heard of Segways? The curious name belongs to a two-wheeled electric self-balancing human transporter with a computer-controlled gyroscopic stabilization system invented by US entrepreneur Dean Kamen. The rise of the Segway.
The Segway has existed for over a decade and enjoyed a gradual rise to fame, having appeared in all manner of movies and TV shows. And now that the police use them to patrol the streets and Segway city tours are commonplace around the world, the Segway and its balancing technology are rapidly rising in everyday use, from electronic mobility aid to off-roading and rapid response security. Perhaps it's the $3,000 price tag that's holding the Segway back. But when compared to other light motor vehicles like quad bikes and mobility scooters, this seems the norm. Maybe it's the unusual nature of its design, control, and the advanced science that maintains balance that provides the barrier to entry? Or perhaps it's simply because most people have never had the chance to actually ride one.
Segway riding.
I recently received a Segway experience as a gift for my 30th birthday. Like most people, I knew what a Segway was, but had no desire to ride one, let alone a basic knowledge of how they even work. But that changed very quickly. Direction and speed is controlled by leaning and turning your body. The further you lean forward, the faster it goes. Lean back and it reverses. Shift your body weight while holding on to the handlebars, and the Segway turns slowly on the spot or steers. But what's actually happening is that various gyroscopic and fluid-based mobilization sensors attached to two computers within the Segway quickly analyze your weight and height while stationary, and then use these sensors to detect the shift in weight and respond accordingly by changing speed and direction. Meanwhile, the electric motors can go up to 20 kilometers per hour, slightly faster than the average person's sprinting speed. While Segway speeds are usually limited, the ones used for off-road rallies aren't. So body armour and BMX crash helmets are essential for riding safely at speed. Physically, riding a Segway at slow speeds is surprisingly comfortable, because you only need to stand straight and lean forward gently. Riding at speed uses more energy due to the shift in weight required to steer the Segway at speed while maintaining balance, even though the Segway does this for you using its many gyroscopes and sensors. However, whether travelling at speed or at a gradual pace, the Segway feels amazingly smooth on flat tarmac and pavements to sloping woodland tracks. And it's all because of the gyroscope that maintains balance and control.
Segway legal restrictions.
Would I personally consider buying one over a quad bike or BMX? Definitely, when the ride is so comfortable and it's electrically powered rather than petrol powered. However, the legal restrictions make Segway ownership problematic. Here in the UK, the Segway is classified as a powered vehicle and subject to road traffic law. However, because it doesn't meet the required safety standards, it is illegal on both roads and footpaths. This is because riders are too exposed to mix with general traffic on a road, while being too fast, heavy and dangerous to other users on footpaths or cycle paths. So the only place you can ride a Segway is on private property. And the same law applies in many other countries, although there seem to be some exceptions where police are allowed to ride them, while tourists are allowed to hire them or ride them for city tours within certain designated areas.
The rise of the Segway.
While the Segway has gradually grown in popularity over the years, its use remains restricted, although this hasn't stopped Segway off-road racing, Segway city tours, and the Segway becoming a mode of mobilisation for security and police around the world. The growing popularity of the Segway seems to help various governments lift bans or restrictions on where it can be ridden. And with every ban that's lifted, its popularity and general use becomes increasingly widespread. Perhaps it won't be long until we're all riding one to work after all. 18.12. Topic in a nutshell.
Getting around in a big city, people can use various types of transportation. First of all, they can use public transport, underground, trolley buses, buses or trams. It would be very important to use these vehicles in every town and city because that would mean less air pollution and there would be far fewer accidents. People could read and relax on the vehicles instead of spending their time in enormous traffic jams. Secondly, people can use their cars. Although it can be very comfortable to get somewhere by car, sometimes there are huge traffic jams, especially during the rush hour. So it can take a long time to reach your destination. Parking can also cause problems. Finding a parking lot during the day can be a real challenge because there are so many cars in the city centre. Thirdly, more and more people use their bikes. It is very cheap, environmentally friendly, and fortunately nowadays the number of cycle lanes is increasing. Finally, people can walk. But they have to be fit and healthy, and they have to take into account that it takes a long time to get somewhere.